welcome to NC Spin, an unrehearsed discussion about issues of interest to North Carolina. Now here's the host of NC Spin, Tom Campbell.
Thank you for tuning in this week's NC Spin. We thought it was never going to get here, but the 2020 elections are over. Or are they? Our panel this week updates you on the winners, the losers, and why we still don't know the outcomes of some races. Joining our panel this week are Michael Bitzer, political science professor at Catawba College, Brad Crone, political and communications consultant, John Hood, syndicated columnist and author, and Chris Fitzsimon, director of the state's newsroom. And joining us a little later will be Becky Gray, the vice president of the John Locke Foundation. We'll begin our uninterrupted discussion after these brief messages from our underwriters.
12,000 North Carolina veterans are uninsured with no options to buy health insurance. They fought for us. Now let's fight for them. Let's create a North Carolina solution for covering the uninsured.
To learn more, visit careforcarolina.com.
Your life is more flexible and efficient than ever. And your energy is too. See how North Carolina's electric cooperatives are building a brighter future for the rural communities we serve at ncelectriccooperatives.com/brighter.
The big issue in 2020 is healthcare. Let's talk basics. You are the key to your own personal health, but there is strong evidence that if you have a relationship with a family physician, your quality of life will be better. You'll likely live longer, and you'll have 33% lower healthcare costs. Your family doctor knows you, has your medical history, and can quickly diagnose health problems. Family Physicians, your trusted healthcare advisor for life.
Government plays a key role in your life, affecting your paycheck, the way you educate your kids, the way you do business. How can you tell if government is doing a good job, making the right choices, spending tax dollars wisely? CarolinaJournal.com tackles those questions every day. The John Locke Foundation publishes Carolina Journal in print each month and on the web each day at CarolinaJournal.com. You'll find exclusive investigative reports on topics no one else is covering. What else? A rundown of the best news stories, editorials, and opinion columns in North Carolina. John Hood's Daily Journal. News stories and important public events at CarolinaJournal.tv. And the voices of the newsmakers themselves at Carolina Journal Radio. In print, on the air and on the web, you can find the information you need at CarolinaJournal.com.
We now return to NC Spin.
Let's begin the spin. North Carolina didn't have to wait as long as many states to determine election outcomes in most races, but there were some surprises and some delays. So let's get the panel to give you their spin on Tuesday's vote. Michael, I want to start with you. The big question everybody's asking right now is why hasn't there been declared a winner in North Carolina's presidential and U.S. Senate races? Help us understand.
Well, partly because we have potentially 100,000 outstanding absentee by mail ballots that are still out there that have until next Thursday to come in and be counted, reviewed, whether accepted and or counted. And then we also have about 40,000 provisional ballots. Typically about less than half of those provisional ballots will be accepted and counted in. But the races are so tight and so competitive, particularly presidential and U.S. Senate, that these votes may affect the outcome, but probably more tighten the races than necessarily flip them.
And we're going to talk about the individual races in a few minutes, but let's take sort of a 30,000-foot macro view of this election. What does it say about North Carolina, Brad, that we voted for a Republican president and U.S. Senate candidate and a Democratic governor?
Well, Tom, I'm here to eat crow today after last week predicting that the Democrats would have a whole lot better night. But I'll say this, eating crow is a flavor that I'm familiar with. I had two models, one Democrats performing very well, and then the tic-tac-toe model. And we saw a tic-tac-toe model. We saw voters in the suburban areas go in and vote for President Trump, Senator Tillis, then come back in and vote for Cooper, and then vote for Mark Robinson. So literally, they were all over the place.
It was a good night for Republicans. But the media and the polls, as Brad was alluding, obviously didn't get this, Chris. Should we just stop believing in all these polls?
No, I mean, I think, well, we should take them all with more than one grain of salt, I think, going forward. This happened in 2016. It happened in some ways, again. What I find a little disconcerting is there are actually politicians now saying there were fraudulent polls done. This wasn't Democratic pollsters that had it wrong. These were Republican pollsters that had it wrong. The Civitas Institute had a poll out right before the election showing a big Democratic night. So clearly the science of polling, the turnout, the virus, there's a million things we'll be talking about as we go along. It's a very complicated election. There is no one easy answer.
Fraudulent seems to be a word used very commonly these last day or two. John, we don't have straight ticket voting in North Carolina anymore, but it was pretty obvious Republicans voted pretty consistently down the ticket, didn't they?
Well, they did fairly consistently, but as Brad alluded to, not entirely. There were Republican-leaning voters, and actually I think this is largely a rural story, not a suburban story, but there were older rural voters in North Carolina who were right-leaning, who voted Republican on most races, but not the governor's race, and sometimes in a few cases not some other races, like Secretary of State, for example. So we don't have very many split-ticket voters anymore. But in a state that is roughly 50-50 tied in terms of party balance, well, 48-48, let's say, then those few percentage points of split-ticket voters are decisive. And that's why Cooper was elected against what was otherwise a largely Republican wave.
Michael Bitzer, you have dissected the electorate and I'm sure the turnout of this race. Tell us who voted and who didn't.
Well, certainly, you know, it reflects a common kind of North Carolina electorate. Typically, about two-thirds of the voters are white voters. This year, the exit polls are indicating 24% are African Americans. I want to see the North Carolina State Board of Elections data to confirm that. I think that that's a little bit high for what we saw, particularly in terms of the early votes, but also on Election Day. But, you know, this electorate, as Don said, is highly competitive. It is very divided. And it's not like 2004 when George W. Bush won by 12 points and then Democratic Mike Easley won by 12 points. Those split ticket voters just don't exist in the numbers that we have seen in this state.
Good point.
Here's the important thing, Tom. Mm-hmm. The Republicans did what they had to do. Their turnout operation superseded the Democratic turnout operation. They identified persuadable voters. They went out and knocked on their doors, telephoned them, and got them to the polls.
I was going to ask you, it didn't look like the Democrats had as great a ground game as the Republicans did. I know that in my own particular neighborhood, normally in years past, we've had lots of door knocks and people coming around for one party or one candidate or another. This year, we only had one, and it was a young lady who was advocating for Senator Tillis.
Yes, so, I mean, this is not only did we all know this going in, this was a conscious choice. Democrats decided in the summer, primarily concerned about coronavirus, they were not going to do traditional canvassing. Republicans went in on it. Democrats realized that was a mistake and went in on it, too, but they came in late. Frankly, I think they chose, people walking around outside barely getting close to each other is like a low-risk activity, and they should have stuck with that all along.
Yeah. Chris, what was the issue here? We were told all along the number one issue on voters' minds was the coronavirus. Now we're hearing that wasn't it. The exit polls are saying that wasn't it at all. It was the economy.
Yeah, and I think we'll find out some more data. I think the economy was overriding, but the argument the Democrats probably didn't make as strongly as they could have is that the economy and the coronavirus are intertwined, that you can't solve the economic problems until you solve the coronavirus problems. And ironically, and we'll be talking about this in the next few weeks, the coronavirus cases are setting records all over the country now. It hasn't gone away. It's just dropped out of our consciousness because we're all focused on the election.
Michael, any final thoughts on the overview of the election in North Carolina?
And I think that this election only solidifies and deepens the partisan divide in this state. Yes, North Carolina is competitive. It will be for some time. But we are a deeply divided electorate in North Carolina.
Michael Bitzer, as always, we thank you for your participation and for sharing this information with us on Tuesday's election.
My pleasure.
We welcome to our panel Becky Gray, Senior Vice President of the John Locke Foundation. In the presidential race, Joe Biden had a one-point lead in the polls going in, but Trump's leading by some 76,000 votes. Are there enough ballots left uncounted to make a difference in this race, Becky?
Well, we don't think so, but, you know, erring on the side of caution and being very careful through this election to make sure that all of the votes are counted correctly, and that the results, in fact, are what the votes say they are. I think they're waiting for it. I do not believe, just the way the numbers are coming in and figuring this out, that it will make a difference. But, you know, again, erring on the side of caution, which I think is the right thing to do.
Chris,
they're holding off on this.
Chris, is that the same thing with the U.S. Senate race?
Oh, yeah, I do think that. Tillis has a larger lead than Trump does. I think it's one of those old things you hear in sports. It's mathematically possible, but I think very, very unlikely. I think the two races that will be affected are the Chief Justice of the Supreme Court, which is just a few thousand votes, and Josh Stein, who's only up roughly 10,000.
Yeah, we're going to get to
those
that.
Those are the two, I think. But I think those are the only ones that it looks like. And maybe one legislative race in Wilmington.
All right. Let's look at the congressional races a second here, John. We started out Tuesday with a 10-3 majority of Republicans to Democrats. We ended up 8-5. Any surprises there?
No surprises at all. There was some talk about the Madison-Cawthorn race in the western part of the state being competitive. It didn't really turn out that way. There were two somewhat competitive races, the 8th and 9th districts, both starting in the Charlotte area and stretching eastward. Neither of them ended up being problematic for the Republicans. Democrats were hopeful, but it didn't pan out.
Okay, so our delegation in January will be 8 Republicans and 5 Democrats.
Because of redistricting, those two seats that the Democrats gained were also no surprise.
All right, let's move to the Council of State for a minute here. Brad, Governor Cooper was leading in the polls by double digits. He only won by 4 points over Dan Forrest. Tell us why. What happened there?
Well, Tom, statistically, when you look at the performance of the governor's race going all the way back to 2016, the Democrats have only had a slight advantage in the governor's race. Both presidential and the U.S. Senate races have been Republican performing races. So I was not surprised to see a 4-point margin there for the governor. I think the most interesting race in the Council of State by far was the election of the lieutenant governor-elect Mark Robinson out of Greensboro.
And we're going to get to that in a second. Was this a referendum, Brad, on Roy Cooper's handling of the coronavirus?
I think it was to a certain extent, but I also think that the governor had almost a 8-1 spending advantage over a ill-prepared, ill-funded lieutenant governor who was running for governor, who was never able to get his campaign off the ground.
Tom, if I could just point out real quick, if you compare Donald Trump's numbers and Dan Forrest's numbers, you can kind of see what happened here. They didn't do all that differently in urban areas and with younger voters. They were about the same. It was really rural voters, older voters, who voted Cooper and Trump. And I think that coronavirus, the mask issue that Dan Forrest talked about a bit too much, was probably the tipping point.
He just never got any traction. Becky, on this lieutenant governor's race, a year ago, nobody knew who Mark Robinson was. And he became the darling sort of social media and ended up winning by 4 points over Yvonne Lewis Holley. How do you handicap that? How do you tell us what happened there?
Well, I think it's one where you have a really good candidate who speaks to things that voters care about. I think this is also an example of outside money coming into North Carolina. You know, Michael Bloomberg was sending millions of dollars to the Yvonne Holley race just a week or so before the election. And I think Mark Robinson had a message that people wanted. You know, this is also one of those success stories that, you know, anybody can be elected. And you know, this is sort of the American dream right here in North Carolina, if you will. And, you know, he also either of the candidates would have been the first African-American lieutenant governor. And, so, you know, that is historic as well.
Chris, you will make a comment
here, Tom. Tom, I got to jump in here. This is not the American dream. This is a North Carolina nightmare. The Republicans really didn't know who Mark Robinson was. He won because he got the same votes as all the other Republican candidates. We've talked a little bit about this on this show. This is the most extreme statewide candidate ever elected, a man who stands by racist, homophobic, horrible rhetoric that he has spewed. I think the Republicans will come to rue the day that he is the leading person on the Council of State for their party.
It's going to be interesting watching the legislature this upcoming session, the Senate, watching him preside. Right, John?
I think that Chris is onto something about the challenges that Mark Robinson presents, as well as Becky saying he is a historic figure. I think the Republicans in the Senate will spend a lot of time with him and try to generate a different outcome than the one Chris is anticipating.
Let's get to that attorney general's race, Brad. This was really close. It was a 10,000 vote margin. And with all of the mail-ins and provisionals and military ballots that are out there, it still could be flipped. Jim O'Neill, the district attorney in Forsyth County versus Josh Stein. Why was it so close?
Well, Tom, the Republicans, the theme for the Republicans on election night was turnout and performance, and they did that. The Republicans did what they had to do to win the races they were targeted and they were working in. This race, Josh Stein outspent Jim O'Neill. There was a manufactured issue over the rape kits, both sides pointing fingers at each other. I think it's going to be absolutely intriguing to watch. As Becky said at the outset, I think there are 116,200 outstanding mail-in ballots. All those will not perform or present. 40,776 provisional ballots. They'll have to go through those.
Each and every one.
And you know, decide. All those will not be cast either. But clearly, it is a race that could flip-flop. And it's a race that the news media and as citizens will have to watch very closely.
And we're told that it may be Friday or even Saturday of next week before we finally get the results of this. Let's talk about the superintendent of public instruction's race. Becky, we had an open seat here. We had Jen Mangrum running against Catherine Truitt, both of them former educators. Mangrum had stated that she was not going, she didn't want to work with the legislature because she didn't feel like they had properly funded. Was this what education, is this what killed her?
Well, I think it was that. And I also think there were real distinctions between the two candidates. With Catherine Truitt, we saw somebody who is very much an advocate for school choice, for opportunity scholarships, for opening up as many opportunities as you possibly can for students to find the best education that fits their needs the best. And we saw Jen Mangum, who was endorsed by the NCAA, very much a traditional public school advocate backed by the teacher union. So I think there was a real difference in the direction that the two candidates wanted to take public education.
All right.
So I think that's what it came down to.
Let's move to the superintendent of insurance commissioner. So far as it goes, everybody had been saying they wanted to see the rematch between Mike Causey and Wayne Goodwin. They predicted it was going to be close. It did stay close for much of the early part of the evening. But then Mike Causey moved ahead, won by 4 points. John, what happened?
It wasn't that different from most of the other council state races. There was some dynamics there. But I would just say very quickly, this is one race, and there are several others, including the Catherine Truitt race, where SENIC, the State Employees Association, did more of a Democrat and Republican endorsement slate. The NCAE endorsed all Democrats. The SENIC turned out to be better at turning out their voters for their chosen candidates, and that included Mike Causey.
Interesting.
That had a huge impact, too, Tom, in the state treasurer's race.
Yeah, I was going to get to that. Let's talk about that.
When you see the performance of voters in Wake County, they trimmed the deficit numbers by almost 50,000 votes. So that was a huge benefit for both the insurance commissioner as well as the state treasurer, who SENIC endorsed.
And so
I think with health care being such a big issue, too, the fact that Dale Falwell has been such an advocate for price transparency, bringing down the cost of health care, I think that was an issue that really resonated with voters.
And Chris, he's already sent the message. He's going after the hospitals again.
Buckle your seatbelt.
Yeah, he's going to try to get finally understanding what the hospitals are charging. Will he be any more successful this time around?
Well, I don't know. We'll see. I mean, I think he is definitely insistent on doing that. I do want to make one point overall, and John referenced it. For the most part, there are exceptions. For the most part, all the Council of State candidates that ran that won as Republicans got roughly the same number of votes. Interestingly, no Democratic Council of State member was defeated. There were open seats. So really, in some ways, the Council of State looks today just like it did before the election. It was a surprise because we all expected different outcomes, but this is the same makeup in the council state as there was before the election.
That's a fair point, but just real quick, Dale Falwell and certainly Steve Troxler did outperform the sort of the default number.
No
and
question.
I think that
right.
had to do
and
with
were,
the specifics right. of those races.
Yeah. All right. Let's talk about the Commissioner of Labor's race, Brad. We were replacing the elevator lady. Cherie Berry decided not to run again. Josh Dobson, a four-term representative, beat Jessica Holmes by 2 points, relatively close.
It was a close election, Tom, but you go back and look at the contest map across the state, and again, it comes back to Republican performance. There was a sea of red across North Carolina with about 5 or 6 islands of blue. Democrats have got to learn the lesson out of this. You have to build a message and a campaign that can go beyond your metropolitan counties if you expect to win elections statewide.
All right, Becky, the state auditor's race, Beth Wood ran and won again, although it was relatively close, 2 points.
I was surprised it was so close.
And we got the agriculture commissioner, Steve Troxler, won again by 8 points. Elaine Marshall won as secretary of state. No surprises in any of those.
No, none at all. But I want to circle back just a minute to the Department of Labor. I think that one of the key issues in that race was the unions. Josh Dobson, very much in favor of protecting right to work. Jessica Holmes, very much a champion of unions.
I want to get to the judicial races now. We started off the Supreme Court of North Carolina had 6 Democrats, 1 Republican. If the vote totals hold, and we think there might be one that might be somewhat questionable, we're going to end up with a 4-3 plurality of Democrats to Republicans there. John, let's start with the Chief Justice race. Cherie Beasley was appointed as chief by Governor Cooper. Paul Newby had most tenure on the court. Throughout most of the night, Beasley was leading, and then Newby edged ahead. This might change, might it not?
It might. This is the one statewide race that is more tenuous, that could flip. I'm still not convinced it will. I don't think people should assume one way or the other. We don't really know the nature of these ballots that are outstanding.
Phil Berger and Lucy Inman, 2 Court of Appeals judges, were running for a seat on the Supreme Court. Berger captured it. Chris, tell us why.
Well, because it's similar to the Council of State. All these statewide races, and I disagree with Becky, I don't think most people in North Carolina knew Josh Dobson or Jessica Holmes or what their position was on unions. I don't think they knew that who Phil Berger and Lucy Inman was, with all due respect to them as people or candidates. This was part of the Republicans, to their credit, making sure their voters went down the ballot and voted in all these statewide races.
Does that explain, Brad, why Tamara Baringer beat Mark Davis?
Yeah, it was Republican performance. But the good news there is that Tamara Baringer is an expert attorney, former state legislator. She will do an excellent job on the state Supreme Court.
The Court of Appeals, Becky, went 5-5 so far as Republicans were concerned. Let's look at those very quickly. Fred Gore beat Laura Cubbage. Fred was an incumbent. What happened?
You know, I think in all of those Court of Appeals races and all the judicial races, there was a real attention on what the courts do. We've seen the lawsuits.
Yeah.
I think the law and order and, you know, the rioting and the protesting and just, you know, law and order was on the ballot this
all right.
time. And
Chris,
voters,
so far as,
like Republicans, do a better job.
Yeah, we got to get our answers shorter here because we're running out of time. Chris, April Wood defeated Tricia Shields. Tell us why.
I mean, I don't think most people in North Carolina knew either one of them. This is the Republican performance. Brad is right. They did a better job getting people out to vote. That literally is the story of the election.
Incumbency helped Chris Dillon, no question about it. He beat Gray Stiers by 4 points. Was that what happened there, John?
Yes, and I think, again, the public safety message was something the judicial candidates for the Republicans used effectively.
All right, Chris Brock beat Jefferson Griffith by 2 points. Brad?
Same thing there.
All the way around.
Yeah, it was the other way around. Jefferson Griffin had won. A Republican performance, and I do agree with Becky and John in the sense that the law and order message was important, especially to suburban and rural voters.
All right, we don't have time to get into all of the legislative races, but essentially at the end of the day, Democrats had hoped they would capture one of the houses or both. The prediction was they might. If you remember last week, I had you same 4 people on. 2 of you said they would capture a house. 2 of you said they wouldn't. They didn't. But they didn't overturn the veto-proof majorities, or they didn't gain veto-proof majorities. Essentially what happened, the House gained 4 seats. The Senate gained 1, so far as Democrats were concerned. Was this just a Republican night?
Well, I think part of this was candidate recruitment. The money advantage of the Democrats just wasn't enough. And people overplay the role of money anyway. Brad can't answer because his mouth is full of crow meat.
So are we set?
Yeah, does old crow count?
Yeah.
Does old crow whiskey count?
Pappy Winkle, Mike. Brad, is this going to mean we're going to have the same? I've got about 15 seconds.
They'll have a supermajority in 2022 after redistricting.
All right, we're going to have the same kind of contest between the governor and lieutenant governor?
Absolutely.
I mean, the governor and the legislature. Well, phew, we're out of time. You've heard our spin on the issues of the day. To stay informed all during the week, sign up for our free weekly email newsletter, give your feedback, and read my column. Visit our website, ncspin.com, or catch NC Spin on Facebook. While on that website, sign up for our newsletter. And always, we tell you to stay informed and watch out for the spin.
Twelve thousand North Carolina veterans are uninsured with no options to buy health insurance. They fought for us. Now let's fight for them. Let's create a North Carolina solution for covering the uninsured.
To learn more, visit careforcarolina.com.
Your life is more flexible and efficient than ever. And your energy is too. See how North Carolina's electric cooperatives are building a brighter future for the rural communities we serve at ncelectriccooperatives.com/brighter.
The big issue in 2020 is healthcare. Let's talk basics. You are the key to your own personal health, but there is strong evidence that if you have a relationship with a family physician, your quality of life will be better. You'll likely live longer, and you'll have 33% lower healthcare costs. Your family doctor knows you, has your medical history, and can quickly diagnose health problems. Family Physicians, your trusted healthcare advisor for life.
Join us next week and get the spin on issues facing our state. For more information or to learn how to contact us, visit our website, ncspin.com. NC Spin is a copyrighted production of Carolina Broadcasting System, Incorporated.